Welcome everybody to the services this evening. It's sure good to see each one here tonight. It's been a beautiful set of days. We were driving back from Canyon today and just looking at the green, it's just fantastic. It looks like Ireland. Well, I've never been to Ireland, but it looks like what I would imagine Ireland would look like. But it's just, we've been very blessed in a lot of different ways. The topic today has been on heaven, and I can only imagine what that view is going to be like. The more I think about heaven, the more excited I get about that, and I have to tell you, I expect to be there. Now, if it was based upon merit, I would know that I wasn't going to be there. So I don't want this to sound arrogant. But I do believe that unless we expect to be there, we're probably not going to be surprised. We need to have an attitude of this is what God has promised, and this is what I'm going to accept that covenant, that agreement that He's made. And I'm going to do my part. And though I will fail and I'll fail again, I'll keep coming back to Him with His agreement that He has put in writing and that He has sealed with the blood of Christ. And I expect to be there. And again, though we don't deserve it, hopefully we're looking forward to it. We close with the passage in Hebrews, the end of chapter 1. In verse 14, where we talked about all angels, aren't they all ministering spirits? But then in chapter 2, notice what the writer says. Starting in verse 1 of Hebrews 2, we must pay more careful attention, therefore, to what we have heard, so that we do not drift away. For if the message spoken by angels was binding and every violation and disobedience received its just punishment, how shall we escape if we ignore such a great salvation? This salvation, which was first announced by the Lord, was confirmed to us by those who heard Him. Well, that's a great question. How will we escape? And we're talking about the punishment. How will we escape the punishment if we ignore this tremendous reward? It's something that we don't want to miss. Heaven is so difficult for us to conceive of, I believe, because it's spiritual and it's something that we're just not capable of firmly comprehending. But we're capable of understanding what beauty on earth is, and we're capable of understanding what peace on earth is, and what joy on earth is. And since, if you will recall, the heavens and the earth were created in 6 days by God through Christ, and Christ has gone to prepare a place for us. Now, I don't know if He prepared that place in one day or if He's still preparing it. I don't know, but I suspect it's going to be something that is beyond our wildest dreams and our wildest imagination, but we don't want to miss it. It's a great salvation. It is the focal point, should be the focal point of our life. And by making that the focal point of our life, God and Christ and the reward that we have coming, it makes this life so much sweeter. I've heard people talking recently about enjoying the journey more and more, and I think we need to enjoy the journey. Though the journey be difficult from time to time, God has put so much on this earth that is just pleasing to the eye and to the mind and to the heart that we know He loves us. And so we ought to be pleased by these things. We ought to enjoy these things. But the prospect of heaven is just beyond anything we can imagine. And so this affirmation of how beautiful it is and how you don't want to miss it, and how will you escape hell if you ignore it? It's a valid question. It's one that we, I believe, deserves our attention. And so this is one of the things God wants us to know. In Matthew 25, we have a parable that is so familiar to us that at times I believe it's easy to kind of overlook some things. And as I was going through this parable again, as far as the reward that the faithful will get, I noticed something I'd never noticed before. And so I want to read this again. Matthew chapter 25, starting in verse 19, the parable of the talents. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received the 5 talents brought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 5 talents. See, I've gained 5 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I'll put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Well, of course, these things do jump out at us. You're going to be put in charge of many things. What those things are, we don't exactly know. We'll talk about some of them in just a moment. But this other idea of come and share your master's happiness. So often, we look at the punishments that God metes out to those who refuse the rewards, and we look at God, I believe, sometimes as always angry and always just filled with retribution and punishment. But he only metes these things out when people won't accept the happiness part, the blessings part. And so this is one of the beautiful things about heaven is people are going to be happy there. God is happy there, and Christ will be happy there, and we get to share in that. And I cannot imagine a happiness or a joy that we could even compare it to today. You know, when our children are born, there's a joy there that's just, you're just kind of taken aback. That really is a baby. That's our baby. It's a precious life. You get a job that you've really been wanting, and it's just, oh man, pinch me! I can't believe this is really happening. Or you find someone that you want to marry that wants to marry you right back, and that's a really big thing. And there's all sorts of things in life that are just filled with happiness. But boy, compared to what this must be like. And we're sharing it with God. Happiness that is shared is much superior to just having a private satisfaction. And then to think of sharing it with those we love, with the rest of the reconciled, with God. We don't want anybody that's here tonight to miss that. Can you think of anybody that is here that you would just as soon not be there? If you can, don't say anything. But we want to be there with each other. And we want to help each other get there. We want to pray for each other, root for each other. It's going to be a time of happiness. The other servant came and essentially said the same thing with 2 talents. And then, verse 24, the man who had received the 1 talent came. Master, I knew you're a hard man. That's a lie. By the way, he's not a hard man. He's a fair man. He's a just man. When we talk about God, he is a fair and just God. But as far as being hard, no. People think they know God, I think, when they assign these harsh attributes to him. He is not that. I knew you were a hard man. And so he says, harvesting where you had not sown and gathering where you've not scattered seed. Well, who provided the land? Who provided the seed? We get to thinking that this is mine. This is just, we just hold on to things like a little 2-year-old, you know, screaming at a little 1-year-old, mine, mine. Not that I know about these things, but it seems like it's something that happens. And then he said, because of that, I was afraid and went out and hid your talent in the ground. See, here's what belongs to you. Here was somebody who was one of those who thought they could get by with the bare minimum. I'm not going to do anything extra for you. You have unrealistic expectations. It's that idea of how dare you ask me what to do with my time, with my resources, as if it's our time, as if it's our resources. And so the master, who in this parable certainly is to be viewed as God, says this, you wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I've not sown and gathered where I've not scattered seed. Well, then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. In other words, if you're not going to do the work, you should have at least put the resources and let them go to work. But you didn't even do that. And how many times do we waste God's resources? One of the greatest insults I think I've ever heard is somebody said to another person, you're just a waste of skin. That just seems mean. But here is somebody who is just a waste of God's gift of life. And so God, the Master, labeled him as wicked and lazy, even though this man may not have felt that he was wicked nor lazy. But he was, in the eyes of the only one that counts. And then he says this, and this is the part that I've read before, and I've considered before, but I really hadn't. He says, take the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For everyone who has will be given more, and he'll have an abundance. Now, we read that, and we process it, and we say, okay, I understand that. But as many times as I've read that, I've always thought of the people coming back with their talents and saying, you gave me 5, here's 5 more, here. And I wasn't thinking about the fact that the master's giving it right back. And with the essential... essentially saying, now use it. It's yours to use for me, but you use it. And here's more, by the way. And that's the amazing thing about the physical things we get in life is God gives us an abundance, but he doesn't just take it all from us. When we're faithful with that abundance, he'll often give us more, whether it's something as minor as money or whether it's something as important as time and relationships. He'll give you more. If you're faithful with what you got, that's an amazing thing. It's not like he's taking everything that you've had and that you've worked for. True, that you've worked for him. What he says is essentially is here. Take this and put this to work for me too. And the idea behind all that is this is what eternity is going to be like. If you're faithful now with what you're given, if you'll enjoy it now as well, enjoy the journey. What a privilege to serve God. Then you get more, whatever the master deems necessary, but perhaps greater than anything else is you get eternity. You get more time. I'm nearly 59 years old, and I've got just as much time left as I did when I was born. The only thing is, do I want to spend it with God, with his happiness, or do I want to spend it apart from God? And I want to spend it with God really, really badly. And he's giving us this privilege. Now, go back to what we looked at in Hebrews. How shall we escape if we ignore such a great salvation? There's nothing greater than what God is offering you and I as far as eternity with him and with Christ and with the faithful. This is a great salvation. This is one of, it is so vast in its scope as far as how wonderful it is. I don't think we could possibly comprehend it with our physical brains, but it is great. And God does not want us to miss it. But if we choose to, then there will be no escape from the other side. Luke chapter 19 and verse 17, Christ spoke to a lot of different people in a lot of different settings. And so while this is essentially the same parable, instead of using talents, which was essentially one talent, was essentially 10 years worth of wages, it was 3,000 days wages. He talks about minas to this group of people. It's a currency that they'll understand. But in verse 17 of Luke 19, after he comes back and brings them back, here's the response. Well done, my good servant, his master replied, because you've been trustworthy in a very small matter, take charge of 10 cities. Now, I don't know about you, but the idea of being mayor of a small town appalls me. I don't want to be in charge of a town, much less a city. But we're not talking about a physical, worldly, evil place. And I don't know that we're even talking about literal cities here. What we're talking about is a work that is of paramount importance. God is going to put you in a position to do work that is incredibly important, incredibly satisfying, and the scope of that work is just mind-boggling. But if you prove yourself in the small things, he's going to give you these big things to do that are important. Now, again, I wouldn't want to be mayor of a small town, but that doesn't stop me from telling people what I think would be the best. As a matter of fact, often when I'm talking about all the things that I would change, my thought is if I were king of happy, it would be so. And so we all think we have ideas of how something would work really well. But God is going to give you an opportunity to put that to work for him at some point. And again, I'm not suggesting these are literal cities. I don't know what they are. I don't know what it means. All I know is we cannot grasp the idea of being in charge of 10 physical cities here on earth. What must it be like to be in charge of something that important on a spiritual scale? And so again, the idea is when we talk about heaven, we are talking about supremely satisfying work, important responsibility. And God has that waiting for those who will take care of the responsibility now. And we just have to take it serious. Otherwise, how can we escape? Psalms chapter 16 shows another angle of heaven. We've talked about this before in the past, but I absolutely love this passage. Starts out in verse 5 of Psalm 16 by saying, "Lord, you've assigned my portion in my cup. You've made my lot secure. The boundary lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Surely I have a delightful inheritance." When the Israelites entered the promised land, God divided the promised land up by lot. Now, I don't know if that lot was purely random, the flip of a coin. Certainly the Urim and the Thummim, or Thummim, however you pronounce that, were essentially a yes or a no, a heads or a tail. That was a lot that was from God, a decision from God. This decision was as well. But I can only imagine what it was like for the tribes to get, you know, a piece of land the size of a state or two. And it's just, this is yours. This is where your boundary stops. This is where your boundary ends. And then to go over that land and to admire that land and to realize, remember, this is a land flowing with milk and honey. This is probably a land that has water in it. Can you imagine? And they went and they got to look at it. And, oh, they had to have been thrilled. It had to have been for people that made their living by the land. It just had to have been an incredible thing. I like looking at a good parcel of land. I was a real estate appraiser for 13 years, and I looked at a lot of houses on a lot of parcels of land. And there was nothing to me that was more beautiful than a parcel that was on a creek or a river or something like that. And you dream about things like that, and you say, oh, this would be something. The boundary lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. The spiritual application of that's heaven. I don't know if we're going to be living in spiritual condominiums or if we're going to be living on spiritual estates. Whatever it is, since Christ is preparing it for us, it's going to be perfect. And I think Christ is going to be preparing it for us. I realize in John 14 when he said, "I go to prepare a place for you," he was talking to the apostles, but I believe this was a universal, I don't know. But I believe this is universal for all of us. And Christ is preparing that place. And can you imagine where the boundary lines may fall for us? It just kind of lets your imagination soar. If you could get what you wanted, if you could get the parcel of land you wanted, the home you wanted of your dreams, and then you go and see something that you think might be that and it exceeds your expectation, it's just, what will it be like? After the initial joy and the exultation of finding out that you're saved and then to find out what boundary lines God has set for you. But again, we just keep going back to this idea of heaven is so beautiful. It's so important. It is so satisfying. We don't want to miss it. But most people, again, I want to say, will miss it. Not because God wants anyone to miss it. What was it he said? He's not willing for any to perish, for all to come to a knowledge of the truth. But Jesus said most won't, or indicated that most won't. So again, the choice is ours. I want to end with the passage we started with in 2 Thessalonians. And it's very sobering, and it seems very frightening, but it's only frightening for those who are on the wrong side of God. He will punish those, 2 Thessalonians 1:8. He will punish those who do not know God and who do not obey the gospel of our Lord Jesus. They will be punished with everlasting destruction and shut out from the presence of the Lord and from the majesty of his power on the day he comes to be glorified in his holy people and to be marveled at among those who have believed. It's the good and the bad. Which do you choose? Do you want to enjoy the thrill of being with God forever and enjoy that marveling that I can't believe this is real? I've never seen anything like it. It's better than I could have expected. Something that will cause us, I believe, to fall down and worship God with exaltation and just being startled at His holiness and the beauty of His presence and the beauty of the presence of Christ? Or do we want to be on those who will be punished with everlasting destruction? The answer to that's easy, but the reality of the choice is where the rubber meets the road, so to speak. You get to choose. One is a lifetime of work, but it's satisfying work for the Master. That work will never be enough to earn it for you, but that's what He requires. If the other one is a life that sometimes has ups and a lot of times has downs. But God will let you choose, heaven or hell. You want to marvel or you want to be destroyed? And of course, the answer is we want to be part of this. We want to be part of it with each one here and with every member of our family and with many people that we haven't even met yet. We're looking forward to that. But it will only come to pass if we don't ignore this great salvation. Invitations open. If you'd like to respond to the gospel's call, we'd encourage you to do that while we stand and sing.